Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to our Sunday, March 1st, 2015 episode of Beyond the Gate Radio. We are now proudly in our fifth year of this show. Hooray! Wow, where does the time go? I am your host, David M. Baker, and my co-host is Sherelle Baker. Hello, Sherelle, and how are you doing this evening?
Great, David. Thank you so much. Great to be here. Great to be on the air. I'm excited for our new guest that's here today.
I am too. I guess that's why I'm in a chuckling mood. I always love doing these shows and with new people that have new and exciting things to talk about. First of all, to all of our regular listeners, we thank you. To the new listeners, if you enjoy our shows, please follow us by clicking on the follow button on this page. Thank you. You may also get all of our shows for free on Apple iTunes. Additionally, check out my website, www.mediumdavidb.com, where you can order a copy of my book, The Spirit Garden, A Medium's Journey. Connect to my YouTube channel. Follow on Facebook and Twitter. Plus, I have pages with information about ghosts, spirits, psychic abilities, and much, much more. Tonight, our guest, Rick Kieber. He is an author and speaker from Evansville, Indiana. Rick's first book, Forever Ash, The Witch Child of Helmuck Creek, was released in June of 2014 and has received excellent reviews. The book covers a paranormal case he investigated with EVP Investigations, or Evansville Vanderburg Paranormal, a group he founded in 2008. EVP Investigations has been involved with cases in Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Rick writes fiction books based on true events. Forever Ash is the first book in a series of paranormal investigation novels. He is working on a second book, Shadows of Eternity. But wait, maybe he's finished it by now. We're going to ask him about that when we get him on the
yes.
air.
Yes, let's ask.
Rick is also a seasoned speaker and a frequent radio guest, having appeared on many and various paranormal shows and events. He is a frequent public speaker for his job as a union representative for hundreds of union workers, and also with his position as Human Relations Commissioner for Vanderburg County, Indiana. Rick is involved in a current filming project and will speak on a paranormal cruise in September of 2015. He enjoys science, spirituality, writing, and most of all, being a father to his son, Daniel. Now, we wish to welcome our guest, Rick Kieber. Hello, Rick. Welcome to the show, and how are you?
Hello.
Thank you very much for having me on. I'm doing well tonight. How are you guys this evening?
We're doing really great, and we're so glad to have you here. And we're all the listeners are curious about just kind of how you've come to be on the with the book and everything. And I got a couple of quick texts about a couple people that are interesting in buying your book and everything. So we want to hear about that as well.
Oh, certainly.
Yes. So basically, what got you interested in paranormal? I suppose I better start somewhere. Did you have an experience or see something?
I did have an experience that at the time I didn't think a whole lot about. I was actually in my mid-20s, and I was working in a construction job, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And I heard this humming sound get louder and louder. And actually what actually happened to me, I was up on a ladder and I got stung in the ear by a hornet. And the venom went to my brain and I went into anaphylactic shock.
Wow.
And I recall as I was, my friend was taking me to the hospital. I was kind of slumped over in the seat and this little voice in my head just kept telling me, just go to sleep, just go to sleep. So that's what I did. You know, I just allowed myself just to go to sleep. And I didn't think a whole lot of it after it was all said and done and we were checking out, leaving the emergency room. He said, man, I really thought we lost you there for a minute. I think you stopped breathing for a little while on the way to the hospital. And my reaction was, you know, I kind of chuckled at it. And I said, you know, I wasn't in that bad of shape because when we got to the hospital, I at least got out of the truck and got on the gurney so they could wheel me in. And he kind of looked at me funny and he said, no, there were 6 nurses that pulled you out of that truck and laid you on the gurney. So
wow.
At the time I just never really made the connection, but it sort of, I guess, would be like an out-of-body experience because I really felt like I got up out of the truck and sat on the gurney and just kind of rode it in, you know, like I was having fun. But apparently I was unconscious and at that time I was barely breathing. And according to my coworker, at some point I actually quit breathing. But like I said, at the time I didn't think a lot of it. And it was a few years later when my son was born. And a few months after that, my brother died suddenly of a stroke at the age of 36. And within less than a year, I lost probably half a dozen friends and family members. And it just really got me questioning about the afterlife. And, you know, everyone has their beliefs, but I wanted to find proof. And as you mentioned earlier about loving science, the scientific side of me said, you know, faith is one thing, but proof is something else. So I set out to try to prove life after death. And, you know, back in my days of high school, when I graduated high school, I had, at the time you had to have 6 class credits to get a major in the subject. And I actually graduated with 13 credits in science. So I had more than enough for a double major. So I was,
wow.
I'm very analytical and scientific minded. So that's how I originally started investigating the paranormal, was, you know, on the scientific side. And it wasn't long. I started the group in 2008, and it was around 2010 when we came across the case that I wrote the first book about. And it was right about then that I kind of switched gears because I had all the proof I needed that the paranormal and the afterlife existed. And so we went from trying to prove it to simply trying to help people experiencing it, as well as by bringing a psychic medium in full time. We also tried to help the spirits on the other side who needed to move on. So
that's amazing.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Oh, sorry. I Frick, I like that you guys actually use a full-time medium, because I find that, you know, some, even with the shows that they're portraying, it's not everything that they can do in an hour or anything like that, but that I found out later that doing the investigations really takes time. It's not just, okay, we got this in an hour and everything is good and everything is okay and everybody goes home. It's not really like that, you know. It's, you know,
not
really
at all
detailed. And I was going to ask you, if your group, do you find that the people in your group also have had some type of experience, or do you find that, you know, it's also for there's some people that are curious or skeptical or something like that, and how do they come into your group?
Well, I'll start off by saying that I've always tried to keep our group really small, so it's more of a team than a group. You know, we have some other groups in the area that may have 20 or 30 members, and they kind of filter in and out. And if they have an investigation, like a private investigation, they'll bring in four or five of them or so to do it. And I like to have a full-time team, but we try to stay around four or five people total. And it works really well, because we know each other like family. You know, we've been together for years. In fact, my lead investigator has been with me since I started the group in 2008, and the other two full-time members I have right now have been with me since just before this case the book was written about. So we know each other really well, and it helps to kind of know what the person beside you is going to do or say, or how they'll react, especially when you're in some place that you're not familiar with, and a lot of times it's the lights are out and things of that nature. There's myself, Theo Kostarias, who is actually a sixth generation psychic medium, Greek psychic medium.
Wow.
He was born in Greece and then moved to America. And then we have two women on the team, Jennifer Kirsch, who was my lead investigator and started the team with me, and Katie Collins. Both Jennifer and Katie both have had personal experiences, visitations from loved ones who passed on, things of that nature. Theo, being a psychic medium, a sixth-generation psychic medium, has had visitations and encounters with the other side since he was a very young child. I think around the age of 5 or 6, he started seeing family members who had passed on who would come visit him. And it's kind of neat because he wasn't the first, whenever he would say something to his mom or his dad, it was just, yeah, that's your grandma, you know, because they knew what he was talking about, and they didn't try to dismiss anything that he was seeing or experiencing, which I really think helped him grow his psychic abilities, because there was, you know, I think that's a big problem that a lot of people have, you know, is that as a child you're taught to disbelieve things that aren't natural. And I really think that that's helped him a lot, and in turn it's helped the team. You know, when I first started it, we would occasionally call in a medium in certain situations, but it got to the point where it was like, why should we do that? Why don't we have someone with us all the time? And then when that situation comes up, they're already there and involved. So it is
true.
As far as the TV shows you were talking about, I was talking to a guy from one of the TV shows named Grant, and I think that's probably enough. I won't have to go into any details of who it is, but Grant was saying that that they actually use psychic mediums a lot of times. It just doesn't go on the show. But he said that, you know, that's a great tool for a team to have, and we kind of chuckled about it. You know, we still tease Theo that he's a tool. But yeah, they, you know, we had a long discussion about how what you see on TV versus what reality is. You know, a lot of times they condense this down to, you know, if it's an hour long show, you may have 43 minutes of content outside of the commercials, and you may have 4 or 5 days minimum, you know, that they're out there actually filming. And a few days besides that where they have their psychic mediums come in and help them kind of go through things. And, yeah, so you basically a lot of times they have a week that's condensed down to 40-some-odd minutes of TV time. So it's a lot of people don't realize they want to get into this for the thrill and or to have some amazing experience, and they don't realize that most of the time paranormal investigating can be kind of boring. You know, you have
right.
to really have a passion
right.
for it. You know, you don't go in there and, oh, I saw a ghost, you know. Yeah, and the other thing I would like to tell people, and I put this in my book, is that so many people want to go out and ghost hunt because they want to have that experience. You have to be careful, because if you have a real paranormal experience with, you know, encounter with the other side, you can never unexperience that. And a real experience like that can totally change your life.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Now, we've had guests on the show like Johnny Zaffis and
mm-hmm.
and others that
yes.
have talked to us. Bishop James Long and some other people. And they
yeah.
mentioned that you have to be careful what you're doing, because even though it's rare, more rare than a friendly ghost, let's just say, or a benevolent ghost, you know, you get humans that are negative. They were negative when they were alive, and they're jerks when they're dead. And then the
yep.
more rarest of the rare, probably happens one of every 1,000 cases, maybe, I don't know. You could have a non-human spirit that's very negative, whether it be, you know, demonic or negative elemental or some other type of thing, or even just
mm-hmm.
a really nasty human spirit that was, you know, a murderer or whatever he was in real life, that's been dead for a while, learns how to use his abilities pretty well and knows how to attack people or things of that nature. So is there precautions that you take or warnings that you give about in case you encounter something like that?
Oh, yeah. We definitely take every precaution we can. You know, we try to go into every investigation, make sure we're in a very positive state of mind, try to push away any negative thoughts or negativity before we enter a location. We also, Theo is actually an ordained minister, a non-denominational minister, and he says prayers of protection. We do a saging before we go in, a saging before we leave so that we don't take anything with us. I know Bishop Long. I've taken some classes from him as well, and I know John Zaffis, not quite as well as I know Bishop Long, but we've spoken before a few times. There's some great people in the field. As far as the average person that may encounter something that's extremely negative, my first piece of advice to anyone, especially like someone listening now, is to get in touch with a professional, get in touch with the clergy. Don't try to do something with this yourself. Don't provoke it. Don't taunt it. Don't, you know, just make sure you get in touch with someone who has dealt with this before. Because it can be pretty nasty. And a lot of people don't, you know, when they think of something demonic, they think of The Exorcist or, you know, something with red skin and horns, and like you said, there's just because it's extremely negative or even labeled as demonic doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, the demon from the ninth plane of hell. It's just a very negative, nasty entity or energy that can really wreak havoc on a person's life, and it's not usually very obvious. They do little things that, that slowly pick away at you and try to ruin your life and ruin your happiness. I've seen it before. I've experienced it myself. And It's such small, slight changes over a course of a long period of time that you don't realize it. In fact, I just spoke on this yesterday at a seminar about how back, you know, say in the medieval times and things, when people would be cursed, a lot of times those curses weren't anything but putting fear into a person, and they had this negative energy, this fear that they were carrying with them, and it would grow, and every time something went wrong, they would attribute it to that curse. So the curse in their mind was growing larger and larger, which would eventually totally destroy them. But it was their own fears and this negative feeling that they were allowing to grow. But
that's really good. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Because you don't think about that.
True. And the difficult thing is ridding yourself of that negativity and that negative energy. It's not an easy thing to do, especially once you plant that seed in your mind. Once you give it life and believe it, it's hard to push it away and say, no, that's not real, or no, that's not, I'm not going to let that take control of my life. Because once it's affected you at all, it's very difficult to just turn your back on it and walk away from it. Like I said, I've experienced it firsthand. And sometimes it is, you know, like you said, a negative energy or a negative entity that was maybe just a person. But they can still attach themselves to you, and they can do everything from, from, like I said, the little small things to actually totally adjusting your attitude. I recall not very long ago, back in August, maybe September, the team and I went out to an abandoned home that a friend of mine's family owned, and we just went out there to do a photo shoot. And when we left, the place wasn't supposed to be haunted or anything, as far as we knew. We just went there because it was an old abandoned house and it just had the right look. So when we left, for some reason I was angry with Theo, our psychic medium. And as we drove back to town, the farther we got, the more and more angry I got, until I was just furious and I couldn't figure out why. And then later on, we were talking to my friend's family, and they're like, oh, yes, this place has been, you know, everyone claims that this place is haunted and all these tragic things happened here and et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, wow, I wish we would have known that beforehand. You know, because we didn't do anything before we went in, and we didn't try to protect ourselves or try to do anything before we left to keep anything negative from coming with us. But it took me quite a while to actually shed that negativity. Even though I realized what it was, it still was not an easy thing to get rid of. So I definitely strongly caution anyone who encounters anything like that to get in touch with someone. Like I said, either if you go to church, contact your pastor, priest, or whatever, and let them know and get some help quickly before it gets
out of hand. I couldn't agree more. You know, as you know from science, the power of the mind and power of fear are very powerful.
Yeah.
And,
yes,
you know, even a psychic healer, if they're, you know, well experienced and have been successful, that might be helpful too. There be a case where the church doesn't want to get involved or something, you know, it depends on where you're at and what the community is like. But any type of help immediately is highly recommended for sure. I totally agree with that. Now, that's, you know, innocent. Something could happen to you innocently. You didn't invite it in or anything like that, but just the fact that you went on that property and it was there, they would consider it as an invitation, I suppose. And I guess it's from now on to be cautious whenever you do that, just for the heck of it, when her give it a little protection, just in case it is haunted, you don't know. Maybe the house isn't, the land could be. You just never know. Now, have you investigated something that was really, how could I put it, you know, off the norm, other than, you know, noisy ghosts, ghosts and friendly ghosts that are just want to be known, and, you know, the average, if there is an average case, something that is really menacing that your team went in that was kind of messed with you guys, anything like that? I mean, you know.
Oh,
unless,
definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
I mean, that's why I wrote the first book, because that was the story behind it. And the experiences we had were like nothing I ever expected. Some of this is theorized, you know, because obviously there's no real proof of some spiritual things, you know, and some of this paranormal and spiritual information that we have is through theories. So there's nothing really with hard scientific evidence on some of the stuff, but I really firmly believe, you know, and Theo will corroborate this with me, because we spoke at length about this, but this is a theory that a lot of people have never thought of or never heard of, but we really think the spirit of the little girl in this book had a separate negative entity or energy that was attached to her as a spirit. So it's kind of interesting. It's almost like one spirit possessing another spirit. And the negative energy that was surrounding her was very, oh, how should I say it?
Was it like controlling,
let's just say,
or something?
That it was, excuse me?
Was it a controlling spirit, a dominant controlling spirit or something?
I think so, but it also was very good at the little girl, or the girl spirit, was one of the most powerful entities I'd ever encountered, and I think that this negative energy was using that power to reach the team. We actually had encounters in our own homes that were very frightening. Everything from terrific night terror type dreams to personal experiences. I actually, you know, remember actually seeing this figure in the corner of my room, woke me up in the middle of the night during a terrible thunderstorm we were having. But I woke up and saw this little girl in my room, and it really frightened me. And it was just a split second. You know, I woke up and I thought, there's something that doesn't belong here. You know, and I kind of was scanning around, and I saw this figure in the corner of my room, and the lightning flashed, and I saw this little girl, and just within a millisecond, you know, I went from this little girl standing in the corner of my room to look like she was just burnt to a crisp, and then she was gone. And I tell this story all the time, but this is one of my probably most intense moments ever of the paranormal, when I saw that figure in my room. And I literally fell off my bed. I did. The blankets were wrapped around me, and I literally fell out of my bed and jumped up, and there I was, turned on the lights, and I'm staring into the corner of my room, you know, like, did I really see that? You know, I know I just woke up. Did I really see that? And I was trying to convince myself that I didn't. But in the back of my mind, I knew I did. And I don't know how long I stood there, but it seemed like forever, just staring. And eventually I talked myself into going back to sleep or going back to bed. And but this is kind of comical, actually. It's a little embarrassing, but I put it in the book anyways. I actually slept with the lights on that night. just because I didn't want that to happen again, you know. But it's a true story.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I believe it. Because I've had some experiences, so I believe that, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah. And there was a time a little bit later on in the case when I had ran out to the Best Buy and bought a brand new laptop. I was kind of excited. A lot of times my job takes me on the road. And so I bought this new laptop so I could, you know, review evidence and things like that on the road. And back then in 2010, that was a big deal to me. So, you know, I was really excited about this new purchase. And I remember coming in the door, and I was feeling great and everything. And I set the box down for the laptop on, I turned one of the kitchen table chairs around and set the box in the chair because I had to go get a pocket knife or something to cut open the packing tape because I was really excited about opening it up and playing with my new toy. So I set it there and I turned to walk down the hall into the kitchen, and it was just like the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I knew I had to turn around. So I turned back around to face the chair, and I watched that box fly out of the chair across the room, maybe 3 or 4 feet. I mean, it wasn't like it slammed into the wall, but it flew out of the chair 3 or 4 feet. And I remember running over and grabbing it up, and I was shaking my fist in the air and cussing, and like there was some entity swirling over my head or something, I don't know. But it was amazing that later on, looking back, it was like I immediately had this incredible attitude change because I went from being so happy to being furious in a split second. And, you know, looking back on it, I can now see that it was that negative energy from that entity that caused that attitude change. I would have been, if had it not been for that, I would have been very upset and concerned because of the, because of the expense of this new laptop I bought, but, making sure it was okay.
He could have broken.
But I wouldn't have been angry.
Yeah.
I was fortunate
but
it was
still packed
in the box
safely,
with
right?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Yeah, those things happen.
Yeah, that's probably intense case we've ever done. This little girl had, and I don't know if she did it on purpose or like she was coaxed to do it by this negative energy, or if, because she was only, as far as our research we can tell, she was about 9 when she died. So I don't know if she didn't realize what she was doing, but oftentimes, and I say oftentimes, but everyone on the team, at least in one instance, had a dream or vision or feeling that they were on fire. And I don't know that.
That's
I don't
intense.
Think she realized
that's
what she was
doing.
Yeah, was,
probably,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that she realized what she was putting us through, as much as maybe, from a child's point of view, maybe she was just trying to show us what she had been through. But it was very terrifying, and definitely, as I said earlier, once you experience something, you can't unexperience it. You know, it's something I'll never forget. And a lot of times I wish I could. But I know, I'm kind of at a loss for words now. Sometimes the emotions come back, and it'll be a little bit overwhelming. But all in all, I mean, the case turned out well, I think. We did discover a lot of things historically about it. We were able to explain to the family what was going on and help them. And I think we helped the spirit of the child as well. So it was a very satisfying case, but it was very actually traumatic for the whole team. And actually, that was, like I said, that was really close to the time when we brought Theo in full-time and Katie came on board. And I kind of think that those experiences may have helped us bond as a team, and that's probably why we're still together today, maybe.
That's wonderful. Sometimes things like that happen. It's just like in the military, you got a squad of guys that get along, but they don't all go out together and they bicker and this and that. But when they all go through combat together and they come back, they're like more of a team. They're like a family, you know what I mean?
Then they're brothers. Yes.
That's right. The experiences do change people. It's amazing. I grew up as a medium, and even though I didn't know what it was right away, and it runs in the family on both sides, generations. And I also went to Catholic Church, and I also studied science and did fairly well in science as well because I loved it. And you have to weigh one thing against the other, what science says, and I know different, what religion says. Well, okay, you know what I mean? You take a great deal of that, and you take out what you don't believe, because to me, my experience is, you know, I had empirical proof, I mean, many times, and I've had good and bad experiences and everything. I learned how to use it, and you know, the abilities, what to do, how to protect myself, how to shut it down, and how to tap in ghosts and people, crossed over spirits. And I'm going to learn about, you know, also the theological part, or the preternatural, which is angels and demons and so forth. You know, just to be well-rounded, so I knew that if I encountered something, that I should protect myself, or what should I do. But no, I'm not. Yes, I've gotten rid of nasty ghosts, especially that came to my house like yours when I was helping somebody, and send ghosts to the light. But, you know, I don't go around doing that too much, because mainly I like to focus on the more narrow part of my field. But no, I've had all kinds of experiences, and I can totally relate to what you're saying. Now, one of the theories was that in a particular home, there's a negative master spirit that's controlling the other spirits and causing them to do things. But I never thought about them attaching to the spirit to make them, you know, like their puppet or something like that. So I never heard the theory put forth the way you just mentioned it, but it sounds very viable to me. I mean, I'm a medium. I've been doing this for years, and I don't have all the answers. You know what I mean? I don't know everything either. I like it that we have more open-minded, great thinkers coming into the field, you know, whether medium or they're paranormal investigator or whatever. And I like everything you said. You know, you think well. You can tell that you're well-studied because of what you discovered, and you embraced it. And you're not saying everything's 100% on knowledge of how it works, but you know that there's something there. You have a well-balanced team, and you've come to the point to where it's been proved. Now you just go out to help people. I mean, that's an amazing progression. And I wish more people that I've talked to were in your place. You know what I mean? It's just...
I do. And not to say I'm in the, you know, I wish everyone was where I am, but I know what you're saying. So many people, you know, go at it for maybe not necessarily the wrong reasons, but not necessarily the right reasons either.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I can totally agree with you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people will be people. Even in my field.
That's right.
We have people
that's
like that,
very
too,
true.
Unfortunately, and it ruins... You know, it kind of ruins things for the honest people.
It,
that's
it
the way
does
the world
sometimes.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does sometimes.
I agree.
And now you wrote another book, Shadows of Eternity. Cases, or a certain case? Could you
it
tell
is.
Us
it's,
a little bit
it's
about
another...
that without giving away the book?
Oh, I certainly can, yeah. It's another case that we worked together shortly after the first case, our first book was written. Or not written, but after the case of the first book was finished up, this case happened not too long after that. And it's actually, we got an email from a social club called the Order of the Owls, which is a fraternal club, kind of like a VFW or a Moose Lodge or something, where you have to be a member to go in and take advantage of their facilities and the bar and that kind of stuff. So it was a social club. And, you know, my first thought was, oh, well, this would be a good one. You know, this will be fun. You know, it'll be kind of lighthearted compared to the last one, you know, the last case that the book was written about. And, you know, maybe there's nothing there. Maybe they're just looking for something they can use as a promotion. The place is haunted, you know, come see the haunted, you know, come be a member. So, but when we got there, we did some digging through the history and had some help with that from one of the trustees there, and we found out that the building used to be a home back in the late 1800s, and the man and woman who owned the home had four young children who all died in the home under the age of eight. And all within a fairly short period of time, you know, very close together. And along with that, there were also, let's see, the Owls, the Order of the Owls bought the property in 1922. And from 1922 up until the present, there had been several of their patrons who had actually passed away at the location. One poor gentleman actually passed away on the dance floor, had a heart attack and died on the dance floor.
Wow.
But, yeah. But we did find that the spirits of the children, as well as others, were still there. We had an amazing investigation there. Actually, we investigated that location about six times and six different weekends. And we even had a couple of public events where we brought in people from the general public as well as the members, took them around, showed them what evidence we had caught and where, explained about the history, to kind of introduce the two back together so that neither side was afraid of the other, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes,
it really worked out well. We did have one, I love to tell this story, we had this one situation. We were down in the pool room, which was in the basement in an old part of what used to be the home. And my teammate, Jennifer, had brought her bag of goodies, and she opened it up, and she pulled out a little wooden train and a teddy bear and a red ball, and we had some activity with the ball moving around. And she said, I want to talk to the children that are here. We were doing an EVP session. And she calls out, I want to talk to the children that are here. And a few seconds later, we heard this loud crack. It sounded like it was a metallic sound. And one of the trustees was with us, Dell. And he said, he explained it really well. He said it sounded to him like two hammers smacking together, just a loud metallic pop. So I was kind of curious to see what it sounded like on the recording, because I thought maybe I could debunk it or figure out what was causing that sound, you know, if it was something mechanical. Uh-huh. Or so I went back and listened, and I heard Jennifer, you know, heard her voice, and waited for that noise, and it wasn't there. But in its place,
wow,
was the voice of a little child. Yeah, a little child's voice right in its place that simply said, you can't find us. And that was kind of, that was at our first investigation, and that really got me to digging of, do they know they're ghosts? Are they hiding from someone in particular? Are they hiding from everyone? Or what's really going on here? But it was just kind of interesting that she said she wanted to talk to the children, and that child ghost responded that you can't find us. Like, we don't want to talk to you. So, well, telling that story, I've got goosebumps telling that one right now. But we had
amazing
a few encounters there. But like I said, I don't want to give away too much, because the book actually is being released in 2 weeks from yesterday, March 14th. And we're having a book launch event at the Owl's Nest. So it'll be kind of neat. We're going to have some of the artifacts and things from the old family that used to live there, some photographs. And there was an old wheelchair that we found in the basement that had an attachment to it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Rick Hayes, but he's a psychic medium who's done work on shows for the Travel Channel and sci-fi and things. But we brought him in to help out on this case as well. And he's going to be at the book launch event. So he was willing to allow me to write him into the book, you know, to tell his part of the story. So that was, it's really fantastic. I'm excited about the event and being able to tell everyone about the story of the Children of the Owls, which is the subtitle of the new book. My books are all, it's a trilogy, and they all have subtitles. So I don't know why.
We have a link up on our radio page here. They can click on, take you to Amazon to check out your books. At least the Ash, Witch, and then I suppose they can go on to find your other book as well. All I do is type in your name, and they can get, anyway, it's easy to find on Amazon.com. Is there any other way they can get your book?
Right now, Amazon's probably the best way. Now, it is available in some Barnes & Noble stores, but it's not in all of them. So, if someone has a Barnes & Noble close to them, they can go in and ask for it. It may be on the shelf, or if not, they can order it. And right now, the book that's on Amazon will only be available for about another week, because it was my trilogy has been picked up by French Point Publishing. And so it'll be coming down off of Amazon temporarily, and then it'll go back up as a revised edition through French Point. But so there'll be a little bit of downtime there on Amazon, but it won't be long, and it'll also be available on BarnesandNoble.com.
Great. And do you have a website, or are you planning on having one if you don't, or?
I have one that's under construction right now, which is EvansvilleParanormal.org.
Okay.
I had some issues. Yeah, it used to be a .com, but I had some issues with the host trying to overcharge me some stuff, so I had to get away from them. And so the new website is not finished yet. I mean, you can go to that link, and it's just a picture of the team with a caption that says its site is under construction or something like that.
Okay.
But I hope to have that before too long.
Okay, that sounds great. We'll be looking forward. And do you have any other projects coming up?
Always. I'm in the process of writing my third book. We're in the middle of an investigation. It's actually in Ohio, and it's based on a woman who lived and died at a very young age, actually. And was an inmate in an infirmary there. But the story is fantastic. The place is incredibly active. And I'm really looking forward to telling that. Right now we've got a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't really talk too much about it.
That's fine. Don't say anything else. We just want to get an idea of what's in the air. And I think Sherelle wanted to ask you something.
I did. Sure. Rick, you were talking about there's a picture of your team on the website. Is that the picture that was in front of the spooky building?
No, it's not.
okay.
In fact, the picture that's on the website, I think Theo's not even in that picture. But it was just taken at a cemetery.
Okay.
Yeah, no,
I wanted to see if that was a spooky picture or not. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not.
Well, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you have advice for people that want to start doing this? Do you have somebody wants to do paranormal investigations or ghost hunting or whatever it may be? Now, is there something they should do? Should they, start with a buddy, not by themselves? Should they do research? Or, how does one get started in doing that if they have an interest in doing it? What advice do you have?
Well, my first advice is definitely don't start by yourself. And two, I agree with you. You should always do a lot of research beforehand. Learn as much as you can about the paranormal, about spirituality, every aspect that you can get some information on. Don't learn as you go. I kind of made that mistake myself. I didn't know as much about it as I probably should have researched beforehand before I actually got into it. And I wish I had. The other thing is make sure that it's something that you're extremely passionate about, not just something that piques your interest in you. Like I said earlier, that you just want to go out and have an experience. If that's something that you're looking for is just some spooky paranormal experience, my suggestion is go to a public event. They're held all over the country all the time. You can always find one where you can pay a fee, go in and investigate a place with some folks who have already done paranormal investigations. And that's a way that you can also get hooked up maybe with a local team or something if you're really interested in. And that's another thing, too, is that I really don't suggest anybody do like I did and just start from scratch. If you really have an interest in the paranormal, find a local paranormal team that you can talk to. Get to know them, get to know about how they operate, and try to join them. It's always better to work with someone who's seasoned and has had these experiences before, knows the dangers and things of that nature, as opposed to, like I said, learning as you go and learning from your mistakes, because that could be a very difficult and trying thing to do. The mistakes can be devastating.
I agree with that, because I have the same thing in my field, psychics and mediums. I've had people I've worked with that said, "Well, I'm a medium. I don't need to take a little course or anything like that, you know?" And I said, "Well, I'm not saying you're not a medium, but you just need to take, like, you know, at least 3 days or some type of course so you can understand what you're dealing with and how to use it and all the ins and outs and so forth." "Yeah, I've been doing this a long time. I don't need it." And then a month later, I get these messages or emails saying that, "Oh, I went to this house to do whatever, and then this ghost followed me home, and now they're holding me down in bed, they're scratching me and beating me up and doing this and that." You know, and I didn't want to say "I told you," so I had to get them somebody that could help them. But, I mean, that's an example on this side of the coin, too. You see what I mean? So it doesn't matter which side of the coin you go on, do your research, work with somebody that knows what's going on, take a course, do something. Don't just start from scratch like you did. Of course, experience is the best teacher, but not recommended, right? Not that way.
Right, right. Yeah, you can get experience going out with someone who already has experience. You don't have to go it alone. And, you know, when you first asked me, you know, what advice do you have for someone who wants to get into this, I didn't come out and say it. My first thought, I wanted to just blurt out my advice to someone who wants to get into this field is don't.
Honestly.
You know, so many people want to get into this for the wrong reasons, either for the thrill or they think that there's, you know, for some reason people connect, and I guess it's because of the TV shows, but they connect the paranormal with fame and stardom and money, and it's not. It is one of the most costly hobbies you can have, if you want to call it a hobby.
Oh yeah.
But it is one of the most costly things you can get into, and if you're doing it for the right reasons, like my team, we don't charge anybody for anything we do. Occasionally we'll have an event where, you know, I'll sell my books, we'll sell T-shirts and things like that to try to raise up a little bit of money to buy a new piece of equipment or something, or to help fund a little gas money when we drive to Northern Ohio or something. But pretty much everything comes out of our own pockets. So unless you're just, you know, independently wealthy and have an unquenchable thirst for knowledge about it, then, you know, yeah, don't get into it.
It is, but it's also, like you said, if it's your passion, because I'm finding now that a lot of people are getting involved into it because of personal experiences, and they want to know about it. They want to know what's going on. And some people are afraid to say, you know, "Well, I've been touched, and, you know, it scares me, and now I sleep with the lights on forever." And, you know, because I do. I slept with the lights on forever. So I had start looking into it and seeing what's going on. So that is the one. That's the one thing I.
You know, that's funny you say that, because, you know, you're a natural medium and you've already proved it to me. But you don't want to do it because you're always very fearful of it. So when we took a couple of courses and you started doing some readings, and then everything became clear, you got over your fear. And then I said, "Well, go do your readings." "No, I don't want to do the readings. I just wanted to do the courses for two reasons. You know, because I'm a medium, I wanted to get over my fear and then understand it so I could back you up." So that's why she did it, and she doesn't do it right now. But see, even she had to overcome her fear of it herself. And so she did something about it and did some research. I mean, who hasn't, you know, wanted to turn on the light, when something happened at any stage of life, you know what I mean? It's just natural and maybe common sense. It might turn on light, you feel more comfortable, and whatever is there might not want to come back because they like to sneak around in the dark. Who knows?
That's true.
Yeah.
But remember, there were some things happening with the lights on that I was like, wait a minute, this is only supposed to happen with the lights off. It was really, I mean, things were moving around and stuff, and I was like.
Well, I'm sure Rick can verify that you don't have to wait till dark for the ghosts to come out. They can happen anytime, 24 hours. Isn't that right, Rick?
It can. It can happen anytime, anywhere. And that's something else that I found myself at one point during the investigation that the book one is written about. I found myself kind of becoming a hermit. I locked myself in my room for a while. And I thought, you know what, this is kind of silly because I've already had an experience in here. I know that no matter where I'm at, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen. You know, there's no protection in my room.
You can't hide from them.
No.
Because they can see your energy. Even if you lock yourself in the vault, they can still see your energy in there.
Yeah, there's, you know, but I think just like having the lights on, I think it's just a comfort we get as a child that we're safe in our own room with the lights on. And as, you know, as bad information as that is, we still feel that way. But
you're right. It is bad information because you're sitting there trying to hide. And then the ghost comes in and say, what you hiding from, you know? And
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
get out of
me?
Here, I'm hiding from you. Right?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, that's one of the more interesting paranormal investigators I've talked to, Rick. You sure have a lot to talk about, lots of experiences. I bet if I kept you on here for a couple of hours, we'd still be talking. That's very. Your story is very
definitely.
Interesting.
Yeah,
we've
only discussed two cases, and I've been doing this for 7+ years, so I've got a lot of stories.
It makes me want to sit down and talk to you about it, or even go on. You know, I don't say this about all paranormal people I talk to, but you know, it makes me want to fly out there and go on a case with you. I mean, get my wheels turning here.
Yeah.
Not that I haven't been on some interesting ones myself, but I could tell you about a lot of stuff too, but this is your show, not mine, and you've told us a lot of very interesting things, and I know you have a lot of things coming up. I mean, your travel, you know, that takes time and money to travel, to do the investigation, to get the team together, to organize, to buy the equipment, to talk to people, to do research. You know, there's a lot more behind what you do than people actually realize, at least the ones that just watch TV shows. There's a lot to it.
Yeah. It's like I was explaining at the seminar yesterday. You know, you go out and you do an investigation and, you know, you spend hours and hours getting ready for it and days, you know, investigating for hours and hours and reviewing all of the audio and video for hours and hours and hours and hours. And you get a 3-second clip that, you know, of some kind of a EVP or a video clip or something as your evidence.
I know,
you know?
You have to
people
keep
don't realize
your eyeballs
that they think,
and,
you know.
Yeah. That's hours. And you have to you can't blink, you gotta watch and you have to listen, keep your ears open.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'm just gonna announce your books because we're running out of time here. But so we have Rick Keeper here. And the first book is Forever Ash, The Witch Child of Helmuck Creek. And the second book is Shadows of Eternity. Is there anything else you want to say before we end the show, Rick, in so many seconds?
If anybody wants to look me up, I'm on Facebook. Just look under my name. I'm probably the only one there with that name. And one little piece of advice that I tell everybody, which kind of ties into what you just said a few seconds ago, was be sure and keep your eyes and your mind wide open.
Great advice. Well, Rick, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Perhaps we'll have to have you come back on again in the future, you know, to catch up and see what you've been doing since then. Thank
That'd
you so
fantastic.
Much. We really appreciate it.
Please come back.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks. I certainly will. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm not sure if we're hooked up on Facebook, but we're going to have to do that too.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, my friend. Take care, and thank you very much once again. Have a great evening.
Have a great night.
Thank you. You're
all right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was an amazing show. Thank you so much, David, for that was an amazing guest. And I really appreciate you bringing some new people to our radio show. I really appreciate that. That was very good.
Definitely. And in a few weeks, we're going to have the psychic lawyer on. Everybody should know that, Mark Anthony. We're going to talk about his new book. Just take a look on the radio show page, and you'll see where the show is. You can read his bio. And I have other guests in the wing, which I will not announce yet. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening to Beyond the Gate Radio. It's been our pleasure. Hope you enjoyed the show, and have a nice evening.
Good night, everyone.